Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's got a bottom like a cannon. It's Richard Herring. Nearly got the wrong mic. That could have been a disaster. I'd have had to have been the guest and everything. It would have been awful. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. That was hanging out with Christopher Lillicrap. Anyone remember Christopher Lillicrap? More people than I expected again. I only remember him because he had a funny name. He looks a bit like David Essex. He was did quite a lot of kids' shows. Christopher Lillicrap did a lot of kids' shows around the 1970s, 1980s. He's still going, just looks him up. He's having a nice time. He lives in a Greek island somewhere. Anyway, he calls it Rahalastapas. So I don't know if that's going to catch. Don't know if that's going to catch on. Here's my amazing thought. Hello to the streaming people. Apparently it's in high definition the last week and this week. I don't know if you've noticed that at home. Took a chance. Apparently it's working out well. That's what... That's what they're saying on Twitter. I've got to take issue with Lego. I'm very annoyed with Lego. My kids have got loads of it. But whoever idea it was to change Lego from being just the standard regular sizes, where the biggest one, the smallest one was about that big, right? That's right, 2x2 or something like that. Now it's just, I've had to pick it up like 3 times in the last day to tidy up the land. It's just they're all these tiny little bits, sort of as big as a barnacle from Moana's boat, or whoever made that decision. Now, let's make Lego really tiny, so A, it goes into Hoovers, and B, it's impossible to pick it all up in 2 minutes, because you have to get that. Hope the rest, when they die, I hope they go to hell and have to pick up Lego off the boiling hot floor of hell.
It's not even any good for stand-up, because there's already a stand-up observation about Lego, which is that if you stand on it, it hurts your feet. So we don't need this. It's not even any use for me. I can't get 15 seconds of material out of it. Very annoyed. My son continues to be a source of amusement to me. I told you last week that he told me he was having a baby in December. He's still keeping up with that, week later. Looking forward to that. What I'm most proud of him, though, my wife came back to find he'd gone to use the toilet that's just en suite in our bedroom. Nice, eh? She came in and she found, like, there was a bit of poo on the floor. And this is the second story I've told about him pooing on the floor this series, I think. And he hasn't ever done it before. So don't start saying my son poos on the floor all the time. He's done it twice. There was a bit of poo on the floor, but there was also, like, toilet paper trying to cover it up. And he'd sprayed. And he'd pooed in the toilet as well, but a little bit had gone on the floor. He'd obviously tried to cover it up. And my wife said, "What's happened?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "Was that you?" He said, "No." And then he said, and she said, "What's happened?" And she said, "A dog did it." Which is what I said when I pooed myself at infant school. I said, "A naughty dog did it." So I said, and he's only three, and I must have been like four when I thought of that. Very, very proud of him. And that might be all the stand-up I've got for you this week. Yeah, pretty good though, isn't it? Pretty strong standard. Who remembers Christopher Lillycrap then? Yeah. Good bunny. What happened to him? Whatever happened to him? He went to Greece. I think he did panto for a while. Work dried up a bit. He was a very talented musician and still is. And I love him. He just had crap at the end of his name and I couldn't believe that was allowed on TV. I remember that. My guest this week is probably best known for his portrayal of the toilet attendant in the Harry Hill movie. That is why... Oh, we've got a bona fide movie star with us today. Will you please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Tim King! There he is. Oh. Thank you. Lovely to see you. Thank you so much for coming in. Well, that's a lovely... lovely garment.
Garment?
Yes.
Do you want to be more specific?
I would say it's a sweatshirt, is it?
I'd say minimum, yeah.
Do you want to describe that for
No, I do not. You can describe it. Okay. Go ahead. I've described it so many times.
Is it? It's the crystal maze cube you're going with the...
Pardon me?
Is it the crystal maze crystal on it that you're going when all the stuff's falling down on you? It looks like that.
Doesn't look enough like that, does it?
That's a bit.
And
I think they're foxes.
Yeah, they're foxes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, foxes coming out of the dodecahedron.
Yes, it's basically a case of foxes coming out of the dodecahedron. I don't know whether that's what they call it on the website.
It's very nice.
I've got to say, that's a lovely garment.
Thank you. That's a very big compliment. I would.
What is that? That's sort of. Sort of like a blue shirt with sort of horrible blotches. Is it?
It is.
It's not very nice, is it?
This is my summer shirt. I bought
You're
this.
What shirt?
I bought this for the summer to go on holiday in.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow. And then how was the holiday?
Did you make, it wasn't.
Make any friends out there?
It wasn't good. I went to Centre Parks. Okay. I was wearing a Rick and Morty T-shirt on the first day, and two of the young staff members at Centre Parks congratulated me for liking Rick and Morty.
It's always a good sign when you're congratulated for your garment.
But then, on the last day, I was wearing a Daddy Shark T-shirt. Are you aware of the Baby Shark franchise?
I wasn't aware of the other two, to be honest.
Okay. And then a girl in Starbucks said, "Oh, I like your T-shirt." And then I thought, do they just tell the staff here to say, "I like your T-shirt," to middle-aged men to make them feel like they should come back here again another time? Because it's working.
Yeah. Which Starbucks is there? Maybe I could wow them with my foxes from Dodecahedron.
It's the Starbucks at Woburn Centre Parks. The one... There's two. It's the one...
Which Woburn Centre Parks?
Woburn Park.
Go on then, what activities did you do?
fucking looking after kids the whole time. It's awful. It's terrible. I had to look after... I wasn't allowed to do any of the stuff. There was a little Land Rover as they drove around.
Yes.
And I got... my son got in and one. It looked like there was enough room for... And I started getting in. The guy said, oh, no. You can't get in.
Well, you wearing that shirt again?
Yeah. You had to walk alongside and make sure...
Oh, that's demeaning, walking alongside as a mini then, Land Rover.
Yeah, and then...
That wasn't what you signed up for.
And when he steered...
Pardon me?
And when he steered into, like, the water and stuff, I then had to reach over and try and get him out.
Hang on, who was steering?
My child, my three-year-old child. My shitting three-year-old child.
Say what?
It was good, though. It was nice, isn't it? Going to little Land Rovers. Nice.
What activities would you have liked to have done, given your...
I would have liked to... Like, in the pool, you have to...
Swimming.
You couldn't swim. I would have liked to swim, but there was no swimming pool.
Water too thick. Why couldn't you swim?
Because there wasn't, like, a swimming pool in there. It was, like, a wave machine thing.
That would have been in the pool, wouldn't it?
You couldn't swim in it. It was full of people, and you couldn't swim in it. There wasn't really a swim in it. There was...
Something doesn't add up here. Was it definitely Centre Park?
I'd have liked to go on the slides, but you have to, when you've got a kid under four, you've got to be adult supervision the whole time. So, and you're not allowed to take the kids on the slides, so I couldn't go on the big slides.
Oh, they snookered you.
And I was a bit scared of the big slides, and there were some little slides the kids were allowed on. I wasn't allowed on those because I was an adult. So I couldn't go on any slides.
It's almost the definition of a catch-22.
It was.
Almost.
Yeah. Do you remember much about being the toilet attendant in the Harry Hill movie?
I got to meet Harry Hill.
Yeah. Future guest on the show.
Well, that wasn't why I wanted to meet him. just thinking more of his back catalogue, his influence, CL Mia.
Did you ever dream you'd be on this podcast before Harry Hill?
Yeah, he put the kernel into my mind. Yeah. Simon Bird was on the movie.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to him, but it's a little awkward because he was like the lead and, I was just the toilet attendant, as we discussed.
Yeah.
Got a T-shirt for doing it.
Did you?
Yep. Not my agent's best work. Looking back on it. But still, a garment's a garment.
Oh dear, good. Now the thing, I've talked about you on this podcast before, I think with Alex Horn, maybe with Mark Watson.
Sure.
I'm interested in how you became a comedian, because it's quite...
I'm not funny.
You're not funny. You don't do jokes. And I don't understand. I just want to know. No. The genesis of Tim Key was that, by the way, before I go into that, have you considered a rebranding of your view?
Have I considered a rebranding of my me?
Yeah. Rather than being, I don't think you should be called Tim Key.
Yeah.
I think you should call yourself Tim Key. Like one word.
How are we spelling it? T-I-M.
T-I-M-K-E-Y, but it's all one word. Tim Key.
Yeah. No, I haven't considered that, no.
No. But you're like Cher, it's just called Cher.
Well,
Lulu's just called Lulu. You could be Tim Key.
No, it's not like that. Because they haven't had 40 years with the names apart and then banged them together to sort of...
Yeah.
And see who salutes.
Tim Key.
Yeah, and he keeps saying Tim Key. Yeah. You're not getting your idea across the line.
I think it sounds like a little puppet monkey or something.
Yeah, no, I know. You're into the name.
Hello, everyone. It's Tim Key. Here he comes.
We sort of skirted around the possibility of talking about my career for a moment. But now you're playing a pretend recorder and saying Tim Key.
I just think it could work. I'm just spitballing.
Are you still playing? Yeah, that's it. Playing his recorder. Yeah. Well, my godchildren call me Timpy.
Oh, do they?
T-I-M-P-E-E.
So they've got so close.
Yeah. Well, they would argue they've got where they need to be. Okay. They wanted to have that name.
Timpy.
Yeah. And at university for a bit, I was called 10P.
10P?
Yeah.
That's better, actually.
Yeah.
It's better than what I came up with. 10P. Now, you're... How you got into... I'm fascinated by this because you were in the Cambridge Footlights and you got into the Cambridge Footlights and you got into all of the Cambridge drama and comedy stuff, but you were not at the university.
No, no.
And you did it by subterfuge.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's kind of, it's really... Yeah.
Well, that's it, really. You've got to
But that's...
I was covert ops.
So that takes some... I want to say balls, but I'm not allowed to say that anymore. That takes some...
What can you say here? Maybe it's a different phrase entirely. Start the phrase again.
Takes some guts.
Oh, guts is good. Yeah, we've all got guts.
Yeah, I've got guts. Some people don't have guts. That's another...
Well, then look for something different.
Okay. That takes some...
Courage, we've all got.
Courage... That takes some courage.
Not really. Do you think it's quite courageous to do an audition?
I think it's, but no one thinks of it, right? So everyone goes, oh, Footlights, it's so exclusive and it's so posh and people aren't it. And you just go, I'll just go and audition for it.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
Yep.
Were you not nervous that someone would go, why are you in here?
Yeah, it felt, sometimes a bit like sort of high wire.
Yeah.
Well, I went in there to audition for the pantomime. So it's not exactly, it's not sort of that sort of James Bond, is it? I thought I can get into this pantomime even though I'm not allowed. Does sound bad when you start to tell it. Because in my mind, it's quite big as well. I think it's quite a good story. But when you're auditioning for a pantomime, when you shouldn't. So, I went in. And then there was...
But it's that decision. It's the thing of deciding to go... It's the thing of going, I wonder if I could do this.
Yeah, I've just got past that bit. I'm going in.
No, but it's... There's that thing where won't I get caught? Won't there be some guards on the door with knives?
Well, yeah, you can get through it. Yeah, there will. Let me tell you a thing or two about auditioning for a pantomime. you show me a pantomime where there's guards on the door for auditions.
Yeah,
that's not a pantomime. That's something different. You go in, you write your email address down. It doesn't look the same as the others, and then you walk through, do the audition, and leave.
Yeah.
And so it's not a great dinner party anecdote.
But you kept it up for a while, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, I kept it up and I got into the show.
Yeah.
And we went to Edinburgh and we got nominated for the Perrier Award, Best Newcomer, and it did start, you know, my career off.
Yeah.
But the problem I've got is I can't think how to sort of make that an interesting story.
I think it's interesting. I think.
Well, sometimes I did have to go to... I had to sort of say which college I went to.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a rehearsal at my college. And there was another person in the show, Sophie, said, can I meet you at the... They have things called Porter's Lodges.
Yeah.
It's not a dirty word. Mess at the Porter's Lodge. And so that we could go and find the place in the college where I'd studied, actually at this point for 4 years, in my origin story.
Yeah.
So you know, and I'm just getting to know this person. We're friends. We're having a nice laugh as I'm looking for the place. But I mean, I'm panicking. And twice we get to. It's like a computer game where you just sort of get to a bit and you go, "No, that's a wall." Walk on the spot for a bit against the wall. Try see how much sheer high you can jump.
Well, I find it fascinating. I think it's great, and I think more people should do it, right? Shouldn't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it should be a call to arms, really, that everyone should do it.
Yeah.
If you live within 30 miles of Cambridge, just get in and absolutely fuck it up. If you're anywhere between, I guess you need to be between sort of 18 and... There's no real upper limit. No. Like 18 and 25 helps, but like if you're 30, you just say, I'm doing a PhD... And in you go, and let's sort of disrupt things.
Yeah. You said you were doing a PhD on Nikolai Gogol. Google. I wouldn't have done very well doing it. I'd have been caught straight away. Because they'd have gone, oh, why are you saying that his name wrong?
I never said his name wrong. I said I was doing a postgraduate degree in Nikolai Gogol. And then one day someone in a bar came up to me who I was in the panto with. It's just such a... there's no glamour in the story because you have to
be glamour.
You have to keep saying panto. He said, I'm in the government inspector. And I'm like, that rings a bell. I wanted to just grill you a bit about being in the government inspector. And I thought on my feet and said, actually, my PhD is more centred around the short stories of Nikolai Gogol. And whether it's possible to translate the short stories, whether it loses so much in translation coming from Russian to English that it makes the whole thing redundant. And then I said, I'm going to get a drink.
And he didn't say, but yeah, you must have read The Government Inspector, though. It's like that.
You have to have read if your PhD is in Nikolai Gogol and you haven't read The Government Inspector, it's like, well, you know, there's all sorts of examples of that.
And I'm going to persist.
That is not what interviewers say. It's such a weird interviewer.
Yeah, it is. I know you don't want to talk about this, but I'm going to carry on.
I do actually.
At what point did you fess up? And what did Alex Horn realise you were lying?
I don't know why Alex Horn thinks he's a part of this story. He was nowhere near it.
Okay.
No, Mark was in the show.
Right.
After the pantomime, we then were in this sketch show. That was the one that we went to Edinburgh with. And the director met me in a pub. The two directors met me in a pub. And on the day that they... on the Saturday night, they said, we're going to put a letter into your pigeonhole to see whether you've got in. After two weeks of auditioning,
yeah,
lots of different combinations, lots of writing, we'll put a letter in your pigeonhole. And I'm like, yeah, this is another problem. So I said, you know... I don't know whether I'm going back to my college tonight, so could you put it in the theatre pigeonhole? So yeah, we'll put it in there. So I'm leading a double life because the reason I'm there is I live near Cambridge, so I'm just with my friends we went to the pub, and then before we got the bus, we went down to the theatre, get the thing, tell them I've got into this thing. They don't really care, and then the next day, the directors phone me and say, let's meet in the Maypole, this pub in Cambridge. And they sit down, and it's almost like they think this is going to become a film in about 20 years. They go, we know. And they say, we want to keep you in the thing, but you can't tell anyone.
Right.
They didn't tell me how they knew, but they knew. Anyway, about 2 months later, after we'd done all of the... written the show, basically... we had a dinner party, and at the dinner party, Brino, the director, said, he's got something to say. And I had to say, I don't go to this college. Everything is, fabricated. Take from that what you want, really, friendships-wise. I've been lying for the last 8 weeks, so, you know, we are where we are. And they enjoyed it, to a certain extent. And Mark Watson, who was in that room, really enjoyed it. And he sent me a message the next day, an email, because I'm still temping, working for the Department of... teaching? Education.
Oh, yeah.
He compared me to Gary Crosby.
Okay.
Do you know that guy?
No.
No? Someone will know. Well, speak to your people.
Who's Gary Crosby? Crosby, Stills and Nash? No. No, don't know.
Well, that's staggering. Basically, all the people who know are shy.
More people know who Christopher Lillycrap is.
There's a Nottingham Forest footballer called Gary Crosby who, in the late 80s, and Andy Dibble is stood there with a ball, this goalkeeper, this bloody lemon, and Gary Crosby nods it out of his hand and scores.
Right.
And Mark compared me to him at one of my proudest moments, really. Just an impudent move at the correct time in your life.
It is. I mean, but there's that risk because they could have just all turned around and gone...
Killed me.
Yeah, killed you.
Yeah, and they would have, it was high risk, yeah.
And they wouldn't. The law wouldn't have been able to touch them for that.
No, absolutely not.
They were actually at the university.
No, they could have torn me limb from limb.
You weren't even at the university, so the university police would have turned up and
said... Yeah, what I was doing was totally wrong. Actually, one of the worst things probably anyone's done.
Yeah.
I think so.
But it's good. Yeah, it's good you did it. But
it's gone into folklore,
hasn't it? It has. Yeah. But also it gave you, you know, all those people that you met through that are people that you've sort of... work with over the next 20 years.
Yeah, that's the only real downside.
Yeah. It's very, I think it's fascinating. I think it is admirable. I think it's just...
Yeah, it did feel... when I was doing it, there was something about it that did feel right.
Yeah.
And it felt very good.
Yeah.
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 How do I know that you're really Tim Key? I'm not just someone pretending to be him.
No. What? It's all done now.
Okay.
Yeah, got it out of my system.
Okay, you sure?
This is me.
Okay.
Tim Key.
We should work on that together. I think we can get something.
No, I don't want to collaborate with you.
And also, I wanted to let's get personal then. When I did your show in Edinburgh,
yeah,
We Need Answers, I think it was. Was it that one or was it? Was it
We Need
one?
Answers, yeah. Yeah.
It was a bit like.
I think the phrase you're after is, can we get personal?
Okay. It was a bit like a sort of early incarnation of Taskmaster. It did become its own show on its own. It was sort of like loads of.
Yeah. Horn was playing us.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was an early incarnation of Taskmaster. It was me, Mark, and Alex.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the latter Taskmaster is Alex.
Yes.
Yeah. A fair play to the guy.
Yeah, he's done well.
Yeah.
You had to put up tents and stuff. Well, I can't. I do. But in that show, I got very fit that year. I was probably fitter than I am now, even. And look at me now.
I've got to say, you do look great now.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was significantly younger. I was 41 or something.
Oh, I think we're both younger.
Yeah, we were both younger.
I think Alex was older. Alex was in his 50s.
Alex is crazy, but yeah. It's weird. At the start of that show, I had to get up onto a bar. Everyone's sitting on bar stools.
Yeah. Right?
And I'm very short, and my legs are very short, and I couldn't get
up. So I helped you onto the stool.
You could say that.
Yeah, well, there we go, and let's move on. What have you got? What's your next question?
So I tried to leapfrog onto the stool, because I was fit, and I was full of energy, and Tim moved the stool as I was just about to get onto it.
Tim Key.
It's the kind of mischievous trick that Tim Key... And it hit me right in the chest and actually cracked my rib. I didn't know that at the time. It really hurt. And then I got on the stool and sat on the stool.
Yeah.
And I did all the stupid stunts and didn't win. Yeah. Put up a tent and did all sorts of stuff. And you cracked my rib.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bastard, yeah.
And there's nothing you can do with a crack.
No. I've actually cracked my own rib.
Have you? What, as a penance for cracking mine?
No. Yours was the penance.
Right, okay. Yeah. the only way you can get over a crack rib is to crack someone else's rib and then it moves on to them.
I was thinking that when I was walking here. Yeah. I thought, well, it'll probably focus on the rib stuff a bit. I thought about sort of lancing that boil in the dressing room and just sort of cutting it off at the pass.
Yeah.
But no, you just got to... that's why I'm booked.
Yeah.
You're furious and you want to talk to me about...
I'm very angry.
You know, in front of some people.
Well, I was fit and then I couldn't exercise for like three months.
Oh, the thing about... No. What you have to remember with a rib is it takes fucking ages to heal.
It does. It was in pain. It
doesn't even matter if it's bruised. If it's bruised, that's 6 weeks, 8 weeks minimum. Yeah. Broken, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My my wife, it was then my new girlfriend, I'd been going out with about 6 months, was leaving the next day, and I was in pain, and she insisted on making love with me because we're...
Now, I've got to say, that isn't technically my responsibility, that part.
You should have made love with her when I was incapable of making love.
I feel like a non-empathetic lover is not really my lookout.
That's my memory of making love in pain to my wife.
Uh-huh.
And then she got into that.
Right. So just, how regularly does she break your rib?
Just all the time.
Has she got a rib hammer?
And then, by the time it was better, I'd put on all the weight again, and that was it, you know, and then I was unfit.
Oh, I remember you being fat a couple of years later.
Yeah. Then I got cancer, and...
But... Now, I've got to say, the cancer was a happy accident.
But what I will say in your defense, I wanted to air this... you're a terrible person, and you did me wrong, and I've never been punished for it. But what you did a few months later, you sent me a biography of Charlie Chaplin. Do you remember this?
Nope.
And it was reading that book that gave me quite a lot, and it was just sort of timed at the time when I was working. I don't think you knew that, when I was working or thinking about doing the Hitler Moustache Show.
Oh, really? No, I didn't
know
that.
And I read this whole biography of Charlie Chaplin. It really do you not remember? It was a very nice thing for you to do. Maybe it was someone pretending to be you. Maybe,
honestly,
maybe it was Timkey.
I've got to say, I do so many nice things. Yeah. They all get that's great. And I saw that show and I love that show.
And so that, it really, I think, you know, there's bits from that book. There you go. If you hadn't cracked my rib, I wouldn't have done a show that if anyone now looks back at it, will find it troublesome in some ways.
Oh, yeah. It's not something you want to sort of scoop back out and put on DVD. But it was great to see you in the courtyard with the moustache.
Yeah, it was fun. That's all down to you. So I'll let you take the credit for that as well. Timkey. So, look, I'm going to ask you my new emergency questions while we're...
Fantastic.
Before we move on, just because I think you'll have the correct level of disdain for them. that's my guess. Would you rather know the truth but always have to lie...
Or that's okay. Yeah, go on.
Be really good at ice hockey.
Oh, no! Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, really good.
I listened to this podcast. Yeah. That's one of the better ones. Oh, I'd love to be really good at ice hockey.
Would you?
Yeah, have you played? Do you play?
No, and I don't like...
Play? Why would you say? What kind of reaction is that? Why wouldn't he play?
I can't really.
Let's see if the cunt plays.
I can't.
Can he play?
I can't risk it with my ribs. They're very fragile. I don't really like anything that happens on frozen water of any kind.
You're talking about ice there.
Ice, snow.
You tell me where the snow is frozen water. I don't know.
It is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know that for a fact.
Yeah.
I'd say frozen water is ice.
What about snow? Also frozen water.
No. Snow's its own thing.
What about snow that's compacted?
I'd love to have the confidence of someone who thinks that snow and ice are the same.
They're the same, but I don't think a piece of coal
you do think they're the same. You think that frozen water is snow.
I think some of it is.
I don't think
a piece of coal and a diamond are the same thing. They're both carbon.
When have I said that? Why are you picking up on me saying things I haven't said?
Because they are the same thing.
Right, so you're saying it, and I don't think they are.
I don't like anything.
No, I don't like anything.
I don't like anything.
I hate everything.
I don't like anything.
What's your worst thing?
I don't like anything that would be in the Winter Olympics.
You don't like anything that would be in the Winter Olympics? I like so much stuff that's in the Winter Olympics.
I don't like skate. I'm not good at skating and I'm not good at skiing, which is...
They're both on ice. They are. Skiing's a nightmare. It's so quick.
It is. So I don't fancy...
Mine's on ice hockey. If you're giving me an emergency question, they're so difficult, the emergency questions. My first emergency question in my life, and I've got, you can be good at ice hockey.
Yeah.
I'd love to be good at ice hockey. I used to watch it.
Did you? You're a sporty guy, though. You're like, you're a footballer.
I play football.
Yeah. good. I'm glad you do.
Are you a sporty guy?
No, I'm not. I like running long distances.
Okay, well,
that's it.
What are we talking?
10 miles, 5 miles. You know,
that's a long way. Yeah,
13 miles.
Give you that. 13 miles. Where did that come from?
It's a half marathon.
All right. Yeah. What's your best time for a half marathon?
1 hour 46, I think it was.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I'll get a coffee in the 11 minutes while I'm waiting for you. Ten years ago.
Yeah, mine was 7 or 8 years ago. I don't, we'll see. I'm doing another one in them. Let's do one now and see who wins.
What, now? Yeah. I'd happily do one now. That'd be great. Yeah.
We just leave these people sitting here for an hour and a half. I can do it on my watch. We can work out how far we've gone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you had the power to bring one historical figure back to life, out of all the people in history, who would you rather reanimate?
Who
out of all the people
Do they have to be dead? Can it be alive?
It seems a waste.
I'd like to keep Jack D going.
Okay.
I'm going to use my powers to just keep Jack D going forever.
Forever. Okay. He's still right, though, isn't he? If you've not heard anything, that he's not...
What's happened?
I don't know.
No, I'm bringing someone back. Oh, it's a good... Well, who's yours, by the way? I mean, I'm going to bring back someone. I've got mine, and mine's pretty good.
Okay. I know you like Russia. I'm quite interested in Russian history. I think I might like to bring Rasputin back to life.
He'd shake things up.
He would.
He's another Cummings.
Yeah.
The hand grenade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll bring back. Pardon me? Matt Axe would be good, but I don't think he's gone yet. I'll probably go Tony Hancock.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He was so sad, though. Why would you bring him back to make him...
give him another whirl. I mean, maybe there might be more support this time and he could sort of sort things out. I don't know, but...
He's a good choice. Yeah, apart from...
Yeah, got a good reaction.
apart from him, you know, wanting not to be alive... it'd be worth the look on his face, wouldn't it? He would pull a funny face.
Not this again. You are joking. All right, I'm going to go for a different person.
Okay.
You want them to be... They've got to have died young.
Not necessarily, they just might want to
I'm just going through... I'm thinking
okay,
here.
Okay, if that's what you want.
Yeah, Hancock. It's got to be Hancock.
Okay.
Has to be Hancock.
All right, I'll ask you this one. I don't think this is a very
I'm going to bring one more back, actually. Winehouse.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Let's give Winehouse another whirl.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough.
Yeah. So Hancock not fair enough, Winehouse fair enough. Okay. Oh, okay.
Okay. Would you rather have to keep two raw-shelled eggs in your cheeks at all times?
Pardon me? Raw-shelled eggs?
Yeah.
What?
Raw eggs.
So eggs,
raw.
Yeah. Just eggs, yeah. How long do you mean to say raw-shelled eggs for?
You would say I'd have hard-boiled eggs and they wouldn't have shells on them.
Well, how about you say eggs and then you see how the conversation develops. Don't start with raw-shelled eggs.
Would you rather have two raw-shelled eggs in your cheeks at all time, one in each cheek, or have a jaw made out of glass? The glass would be with the fragile kind used to make thin wine glasses, not the reinforced kind that can stop a bullet.
Oh, yeah. I get it. So you've got to be careful with your jaw.
Yeah. Or quite careful with your cheeks.
Oh, it's a no-brainer.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's not part of the question.
But that's shame on you for putting any question in there that is a no-brainer. Shame on you.
Okay.
There should be tough decisions.
Okay.
I'm not, grandmother eggs, but I'm going, that for me, every day of the week, that's the jaw.
That's not the obvious answer. The egg
that is
the
obvious
answer,
because I'm not going to be the egg guy. I will not ever be the egg guy. I will get the glass jaw.
Yeah.
Yeah? Look at me. And then I will... and I will find the appropriate, skilled artisan to make me something very special down there.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to have an outer jaw.
Okay. Why don't you get an artisan to make you something to protect your cheeks?
Because I'm this guy. I can't talk. There's one example where I can talk and one where I can't. Goodness. My livelihood, Richard.
It would affect that.
What acting role am I going to get where I've got cheeks that come to there? Am I going to get in the next Harry Hill movie?
Probably.
Yeah.
That wasn't a very good example.
That's right. The only job where that's the advantage.
Be the absolute star. Right, let's talk a little bit about you.
Yep.
Thing you're
amazing.
Here.
That's 40 minutes in. You never got that from Parkinson.
No. He wasted a lot of time. So, just getting straight to the point. Well, let's talk about Alan Partridge. First of all, when you're working with Steve Coogan, does every day you go, I just have to say, Rich Herring created this character before we go, and then we'll get on with it. I just need to get that off my chest.
What, you think I say that when
no,
I go
I think
in?
Alan, I think Steve Coogan, not in character, is Alan Partridge.
Yep.
Says, as you get in, he goes, I've just got to say, Rich Herring created this.
Oh, like saying grace.
Yeah. And then just let's...
No, he hasn't. No, I've worked with him for 10 years actually.
Yeah.
And no, your name hasn't come up.
No, okay.
Did you create the character?
No.
Okay.
Not in any way.
Did you do Tony Farina?
No.
Okay.
No. Didn't do it. I didn't really do anything. Just sat at the back and nope.
So where were you?
Well, we wrote lots of the stuff on the Hour, so we wrote a lot of what Alan Partridge said.
Now, what's on the Hour? No, I love On the Hour.
Yeah.
That must have been quite exciting.
Yeah, it was. Well, I don't want to talk about me and On the Hour.
There's no harm in doing it. We're going to do five on you.
It was.
So how did you all meet? You know, you got some of the biggest comedy brains in the industry that... Well, you know, all went like for 20 years later, we're still talking about it.
Yeah, Armando Iannucci got the team together.
Yep.
That's how it happened.
Okay.
So I met Armando at university, but then he was the producer of Weekending.
Mm-hmm.
And he liked what we were doing because we were, didn't really like Weekending, and he did it. Oh. So
you didn't like Weekending?
No, the 8 weeks before we had the producer on 8 weeks.
Two months.
Yeah, before. Yeah. Not exactly. And it was exactly 8 weeks. The 8 weeks before.
So two lunar months.
The producer had used 20 seconds of stuff by me and Stu in the 8 weeks.
Now, Stuart
Lee.
Okay.
And the first week Armando...
Not Francis.
Not Stuart Francis. The first week Armando was the producer, we got 13 minutes on the 22-minute show.
Me likey.
Yeah, I think that's right. But anyway, it was insane. So he realised...
You're fast-tracked.
Well, I think when he came up to do the show that he wanted to do, which was sort of an anti-Weekending show in a way, then we were the obvious choice because we'd done well with that. But we didn't really have much to do with it. But how was it for you? And I didn't know On the Hour was going to be a thing. So, you know, just for us, it was our first real job. So we didn't even really go, wow, this is amazing. And it wasn't like, oh, there's Steve Coogan. It's, oh, there's that bloke who's on that W.H. Smith's advert pretending to be Frank Spencer. So that's not...
Was he?
Yeah, he did.
Did anyone believe him?
He did loads of. He was a very good impressionist, as he still is, and he did quite a lot of things like that. So that was the thing that I'd recognised him from at that time. But for you, when you got the call,
now here we go.
When you got the call,
but I enjoyed that, Richard.
When you got the call to be, I'm a very polite man, and if you ask me a question, I'll answer it. But.
Well, you've got to admit, I've answered most of the shit he's thrown at me.
When you got the call to be on Alan Partridge, Partridge was quite a big deal by then.
Yeah.
So that must have... And I've read you saying you still find it a bit difficult to work with him without being kind of slightly in awe. Would that be fair?
Of the
circumstances?
Yeah. I think so. I feel like you do sort of meet a lot of people when you do. You meet tons.
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever get starstruck from the people who come on here?
Yeah, not very often. Not today.
No.
It's
going to get my beer.
Get to the... Have you got another beer? Oh, yeah, I've got another beer. That's good. Yeah, no, I do. There's sometimes, yeah.
Go on then, top three.
Michael Palin.
Yeah, won. Palin, yeah, give you that. Who else? They're all white males so far. You tell me.
Mate, who else have I been starstruck by? Brian Blessed. I don't think I was, I was almost...
Weirded out?
Yeah, like almost struck, I think, rather than starstruck. John the Ross was one of the early. Thank you. I think that was just in my brain. John the Ross was the first like person I didn't know at all who I interviewed, and then I was sort of thinking, oh shit, you're a really good interviewer, and I've got to interview you.
Oh, that's not easy to interview an interviewer.
And then that's why I started doing emergency questions, because there was a point in that interview that I just went, well, I'm going to need this. Well, I can't think of anything to ask you. So then I just thought I have a book of questions that I can ask in those circumstances. A
couple of editions now.
Yeah.
I would say, you get quite inured to it a bit when you're meeting comedians. But, I think weirdly those people who worked on, the day-to-day and stuff like that, I feel like those
so
people...
So just from On the Hour...
I think weirdly Steve Coogan is in a slight kind of sweet spot of how old I was at the time when it came out, and that it being related in some way to the first stuff that you enjoyed, and you're not watching it because your parents are watching it, all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But weirdly, my dad loved it as well, so it was sort of... did both, kind of. It felt like you'd found something really interesting, but also you could watch it. But it wasn't really family television. It wasn't like Fawlty Towers.
No.
And then there was just a load of it in a big slew that probably started in about 1993 or 4, and But you just got given it loads. You got given it the radio stuff, then became the TV stuff, then Know Me Knowing You became a TV show, and then it became a sitcom. And it probably lasted for about 8 or 9 years where, you know, that it sort of, you traced it through going through the end of school to sixth form, you know, driving around listening to these tapes and stuff that we bought, these cassettes.
Right.
And then, like, it was a big part of my life, his voice, and you'd do his voice at school and you'd quote the stuff. And I remember meeting people at university who their thing was Ali G, because it was like they were younger. But he was like right in there somewhere in a very, very sweet spot. So, yeah, when he asked me to be his sidekick about 10 years later... Yeah, do you do that when there's a momentous moment in someone's life?
Well, we got Steve backstage and we were going to...
Yeah, yeah.
When he was going to come on and...
Of course.
...hug you and stuff, and we had this big thing planned, yeah. But unfortunately one...
Yes, you have to release a single piece of confetti when someone's talking about their hero. So, yeah, he asked me to do it, and it was it was crazy.
Yeah.
Because I really, really like him and think he's so good at, you know, he's a genius.
Did you tell him or did you play it cool?
I think played it cool.
Yeah. Did you come in and go, I think you're shit. I think you're really shit at comedy and I'm glad you got me because I'm going to make it better. That's how I'd have played it.
You play it too cool. Yeah. I played it a bit warmer than that.
Okay.
But even that is quite difficult. I mean, I think that comes when you sort of... there's no time to say that. When do you say that? You don't say that in a rehearsal, and you don't say that when you're starting to film. The only time to say that is if you're in the pub and you've finished doing the show, really.
Yeah.
Unless you're sort of going for drinks after you've finished, you know, doing it. And we never really did. So the times I've been in a pub with him, which is like a few times, I'm very, very effusive.
Right.
I let myself down and say, basically what I've just said to you. But, but yeah, the strange thing about it is it doesn't really dissipate. And most people, it sort of becomes normal straight away because you're like, well, it's just a person. With him, there is something where I am still slightly starstruck, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. I mean, I understand it. I worked with him. We did a sketch show like in 1991 or something, the Dumb Show.
Yeah.
So when it still wasn't that. He was clearly like better than everyone else doing sketches than in the show. But it was it didn't feel like that. So it's sort of weird me knowing him from before.
Yeah.
I suppose so. That does change it.
But I'll have people around me probably who, you know, when they're his age, where people will be like, I can't believe you're friends with this person. Like,
yeah.
You know, Alex and Mark and people like that, where you're like, yeah, it doesn't really make any... Because we met when... I mean, those guys were like, you know, just... Well, you know, bellends.
Yeah.
Whereas I meet Steve when he's like, brilliant.
Yeah.
And just his sort of body of work is so strong.
Yeah.
And also it didn't help the fact that the thing I was doing with him was Partridge.
No, I mean, it's
sort of a monster. And also the show was in a soundproof radio booth. That was the show. So there's no crew. I mean, there's crew outside of it. But when we're doing it, it's like two fixed cameras and me and not even Steve Coogan. It's me and Alan Partridge.
Hmm.
And, that was a bit much.
Yeah. Do you ever think that maybe you've been in an accident and you're just in a coma and you had been dreaming?
Why?
Because it just seems unlikely that would happen, doesn't it?
Yeah, I slightly do.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Wake up, wait, Dimki.
Yeah, Dimki. No, there is a big part of that.
Yeah.
It's kind of quite a direct hit that most people do not get.
But also the I mean, A, they asked for you to do it, right? So it wasn't an audition. It was you to come in.
Well, it's work that
part.
I would just ask them if I can do it.
But it's nice.
Here's an idea.
They didn't go, we got this idea for a guy. They came, we got an idea for a guy and it's you, we want to do it.
Yeah.
So it's written specially for you, so that's nice. And you're still in it, right?
Yeah.
So that means that it's going okay.
Yeah.
So that's...
Yeah, yeah. It's now not so kind of nerve-wracking, really. But the first one was... The first one was mad. I mean, doing that and then it came out. And also, it was quite high stakes, I think, for them because, or for him, because he had a 10-year gap. And then when he brought it back, it was with, like, the Fosters online thing. That's it was right, kind yeah. of quite a new thing to do, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. It felt like there was a bit of jeopardy going on there. And I just was thinking, if it's not very good, they're not going to say it's not very good because he can't do it anymore. They're not going to say it's not very good because they've done it in this format. They're going to go, yeah, this guy is fucking shit. Because I'm the main thing they've changed yeah. is they've got rid of... I mean, it's like when a football club gets rid of some of their big star players and then brings in someone who's not quite as good as them. I mean, they'd sort of got rid of Lynn and the receptionist.
Yeah.
Basically, all of the people had gone and they just had me.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't really make any sense. So, yeah, so I thought if it had gone badly... I mean, I felt sick when that came out. And I remember I was staying at my brother's and I remember him watching it and me just thinking, I'm not watching this. And he was laughing, but he's like obviously the worst kind of barometer of it because yeah. he is in also a quite unique position of his brother is now Alan Partridge's sidekick. So he's having a great time. Yeah, and then I watched it and thought, yeah, that's fine. I mean, it's not like... It's not that difficult a thing to get your head around, really, in some ways, because he's not. It's not like Morecambe and Wise. I am like a foil, so it's not like he's brought someone in and they're going to turn it into Vic and Bob. I know what my job is.
Yeah,
I'm like a conduit to mean that Alan Partridge opens up and there's more and more Partridge on the screen. But even so, it's like, yeah, it was quite high pressure. It felt quite high pressure.
It's interesting the way he did it, and it's clever the way he did it to cut. It sort of felt like. Testing the water to see,
yeah.
you know, doing it in a small way. It actually was very clever of him to go because if it hadn't worked, he could just go, oh, you know, you've still got yeah. the rest of it. But I mean, I think since he got the Gibbons brothers in to write it, it's kind of gone up a gear, really, which is pretty impressive given it was pretty good already.
Yeah.
So they really get it.
I think it's amazing. I always kind of have my, when people are really nice about it, I know that my favourite incarnation of it is definitely the stuff that I'm not in. So the first I'm Alan Partridge is probably, I think, peak everything. But at the same time, I do, you know, I watch the stuff and I also watch it there and I'm like, when he's doing it, I'm like, that is... And he's an interesting person to work with because he'll reset and do it again and again and again. I don't know how much you've worked with him, but like he'll do it again and again and again. It's a sort of unique process that he has where you don't just do a take and then say, okay, let's do another one. He's constantly starting sentences again and stuff like that, which is a bit of a handful. But then there's a bit where he does it and it's like a musician. There's this moment where there's like 30 seconds of him doing it and you're like, yeah, okay, fair play. It's that bit and that's genius. it's quite amazing yeah. to like, you know, to be in there with him.
Yeah, well, you know, it is... Not just of my generation, but the two or three generations beyond, it's the big comedy character. And also, I like the fact he's gone back to A, because he's the right age to do it now, which is nice. Mm-hmm. But also, the British thing is to do something for 12 episodes and then stop.
Yeah.
And I just think that's wrong. I just don't... Yeah. I think if you've got a character that's strong, then you can do... And well, the character's that strong.
He's got guts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does...
I remember walking in the first time and seeing him and he had the chain around his glasses
yeah.
and just thinking, that's fantastic.
Very good. And I've been listening to the audio book, I've lost the name. He thought as a wife.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. Well, you're combining two ideas.
Yeah. I've been listening to your audiobook of poems. Right,
there's an audiobook called The Incomplete Tim Key.
Okay.
And then the book, I wrote a book in lockdown called He Used Thought as a Wife, which I want to make into an audiobook.
I haven't listened to that one audiobook
yet. No, I don't know how that's got into your mind. but yes, it's certainly true that there is an audiobook.
It's very good. Yeah. Well, it's very good because... Oh, my watch is telling me it's time to go to sleep.
Bedtime. Okay.
Bedtime reminder. Well,
okay, how long do we sleep for?
Your bedtime.
I can do five.
It says I've got to sleep till 6 a.m.
You're sleeping till six?
I've got to sleep in 1 minute till 6 a.m. So if you know...
okay, not for a minute then, okay.
No. I've still got a minute to go. Well, I've seen you do your, but I haven't seen any of your, like, the actual Edinburgh shows, which you won the Perrier Award.
I've seen three of yours.
Thank you. I've done 13, so it's still on average, it's about the same.
It's about the same. Give or take. Yeah.
But I've seen you do that character, and it's sort of, because it's like you, the character of the poet.
Yeah.
Tim Key.
Yeah.
Except he's Tim Key. But it's not quite you, and the audiobook version of it's great to see. It's great to have it because it's performed, and you put some music in it, and there's more to it than the poems anyway. But the poems are great. But it's fascinating because it's funny and frustrating, and also it's not quite. I've seen acts do parodies of bad poetry before, right?
Yeah.
And this,
but you've not seen one do a parody of a good poetry.
I haven't seen. It's not quite like that because it'll be a mannered character. Yeah. Here I am. I'm a terrible poet. And this makes you think. Well, this is just poetry, and this isn't necessarily bad poetry. It's sort of parodying the fact that all poetry is bad.
Well, I can add something to this.
Yeah.
So. When I first started doing it was in about 2004 or something. I'd done some stand-up. That hadn't worked out very well, so I quit.
Yeah.
After 10 gigs. Miserable gigs, actually, and a miserable part of, I suppose, my life. But then I rebuilt, started writing poems, and then I did my poetry character, which was like reading these poems out, drunk, wearing a suit, this lashed guy, and all over the place, and... basically playing drunk as well. I mean, even to the extent, to be fair to myself, and it doesn't sound great, of burping and sort of going, oh, whoops, and all of that sort of stuff. And then gradually that's kind of evolved into something where, you know, when do you know Tom Basden?
I do know Tom.
So his wife came up to me after a gig, and I never really have had directors or anything like that, but I was doing an Edinburgh show, and I just sort of got friends to come and watch. And I think she sort of switched it round slightly because I wore a nicer suit that time. And she said, I think that's the answer. She said, it was a bit more charming, and I think that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
And honestly, that sort of opened it up for me where now I am a bit all over the place on stage still, but that sort of journey from basically a character to the sort of dream of being able to unlock yourself on stage. The poetry is sort of neither here nor there. I feel like now I'm very comfortable on stage, and it was a character, and now it's somewhere between a persona and me.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like really kind of lucky that I've sort of done that.
And it allows you to be, to talk about ideas that are kind of shocking and unpleasant without it being shocking or unpleasant at all.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the sort of the trump card where there's always this kind of like, you know, twinkle in the eye where you can sort of sell ideas and you can sort of make people not stay angry with you because you're sort of, they can't quite get their head around what you are. You're sort of friendly and charming, but also there's something sort of, you know, poisonous lying within. But I don't know, it's very rare, obviously you probably have the same, it's very rare you talk about what you actually do on stage.
Yeah.
But I think there's something like that is happening where, I mean, the main thing is there's something really fun and enjoyable that I love doing on stage, which before I'm overthinking it and trying to work out how to do it, and now you sort of go on and just sort of, it's still nerve-wracking, but you sort of think, probably be fine.
Yeah. I get that, and that's what I think. Listening to it, and as a comedian listening to it, there are times you're going, "Well, what's going on with this? You know, this isn't this. Why is it funny?" And so sometimes it's making you almost angry, but that's the point of it, though, isn't it? You're trying to make people confused. I think, aren't you? As much.
Well, yeah, because it still is funny. Like
it is funny, but it's confusing and I want to say irritating, but it's not irritating, but it's that, it's the same.
It's a shame you want to say it.
It's the same. It
Well, same... I remember doing the first Edinburgh show, my first hour, and it was still somewhere in between the two things. It was a bit of a hybrid between those two situations I described. And I'd walk up to the microphone and I'd pull out my first poem, and it would be deliberately a little antagonistic,
right,
where some people would like it because it's a bit odd, and some people would be like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
So, and I'd deliver it, you know, very earnestly, and then I'd walk to the door of the, it was in the hut in Edinburgh, like a 50-seater. I'd walk to the door and put a key in the door and lock the door and then, and then go back to the mic.
Yeah. But that's what I like. That's why
people
I...
were so furious.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because if you're in the part of... It is a bit of a... I don't know how your stand-up has evolved when, you know, from when you started doing it. Were you ever interested in, like, dividing a room? Or
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think a bit too... When I came back to it, a bit too much. So, okay, I did it early and just tried to do what I thought would get me booked and what I liked, but somewhere in between it never quite worked. And then when I came back to it, I thought, fuck it, I'm going to do exactly what I want to do. And so I did a show called Someone Like Shoggart that was sort of about annoying people, really.
Yeah.
And when I listened back to it, it's the one show... It's one of my favourite shows, but it's the one show when I did them again and I listened to all the way through, I just went, this is actually too much. Because it's too much goading people.
But I think it is a bit of a learning curve, because I remember doing it and thinking, I had so many walkouts and... No, I mean, they were furious.
Yeah. I can see it. I can see why.
yeah, they're irritating. But they spent, like, you know... 65 quid, to, you know, for the ticket.
Yeah.
No, less now. But, yeah, you get the idea.
It was a lot.
No, they'd spent like £10 to watch this show. And I think at that point, I was thinking, well, that I did enjoy it. And I felt like of that run of 25 shows or however many you do in Edinburgh, there was like probably 5 or 10 shows that were really good. And then basically after that, I changed my philosophy and thought, what would be a really good idea is if everyone enjoyed it. But that has to happen kind of quite... that has to happen quite organically.
It does.
I don't think you just sort of stop and go, this isn't working, I'll try this. You just gradually work out that it's not big or clever to make 10 people in a room of 50 hate you.
Yeah.
But maybe you have to go through that to get, you know, to make your act interesting for when it finally lands and you're making everyone laugh.
Yeah, but that's when you listen to it or watch it, I think it's just you're kind of going, what, you know, why has he decided to do that, and why is it funny still, and why is it working, and you know, and that's it. It's making the unusual choices. So as when you've seen lots of comedy and you know how comedy works. It's quite dull watching a lot of comedians, but then it can, when someone comes on and does something differently and it works, it's sort of fascinating and sort of
I'm always interested in those acts, like someone like Brian Gittins or something. Have you seen much of Brian Gittins? Yeah. So it's just so funny and I love it, but the audience is split, and it's just like, it's a great show to watch because it's so fascinating that Brian Gittins, in case you don't know, is like a kind of character act of kind of a bad comedian, but he's brilliant. The guy, I mean, David Earl, who plays the part, is fantastic. But I remember watching him, and it was so funny. People are laughing their heads off, but you know not everyone is, and there's a guy right in the middle on the front, and he just stops everything and looks at the guy and goes, "You look gutted, mate."
But I used to enjoy it to an extent, to annoying people. And I think, especially once I'd had kids, but I think before that as well, but once you've had kids, you kind of think, like, a lot of people, this is their one night out in maybe 6 months.
And what?
Like, you know, but when you've got kids, you don't go out. You never get...
Oh, yeah,
when
kids,
you got,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So if you've got babies at home, you might get one or two nights out.
Yeah.
And then you go out and a bloke's just deliberately trying to annoy you.
Yep. Yeah.
And then seems to be enjoying the fact that he's annoying you. So I decided to not do that anymore
on purpose. Though it's still
there's no shame in trying to make people laugh.
There is no. That is, it's. It's true. Let's quickly talk about, we haven't got too much longer, but let's quickly talk about Taskmaster, which, I mean, you're down as task.
Down as? What's down as?
You're down as.
You're down as?
You're down as. You're down as task consultant.
Yes, that's true. It's a good use of down as, actually.
Thank you. you just have to wait till the end of the sentences sometimes.
Yeah. what do you mean, arm?
So, I mean, you were there. It is a sort of thing that you guys have collaborated on in different guises over the years.
Yeah.
And so it now is seen as Alex's thing, but you're still... What do you do? How many tasks are you consulting on? And
I'd rather not talk about
the
numbers. Look, it's great to be involved. It's great to have the credit. And we move on. No, the truth is, Alex is... Obviously, it's Alex's brain. The whole thing is Alex. And, you know, we meet up in a pub. Alex says, here's some tasks. I go, fantastic. He goes, you got any? I go, another pint. And then we're done. There's some tasks which I would say maybe I've helped in some way, or maybe it's useful for him to know that he can ask me about stuff and bounce things off me, but... That is the biggest joke in comedy, that I'm on that page of those credits. This is Alex's show.
Right.
Yeah.
What's coming up on the Champions of Champions edition on Wednesday?
What's coming up where?
On the Champions. There's lots of things falling off the roof.
Yeah, that was
some water.
Weirdly, that was liquid. No, don't know it was water. That was liquid. Have you seen Shallow Grave?
It was. Might be melted snow.
Again, back to water.
Do you know what the final task will be on the Champion of Champions? I've done all the other tasks on the Champions of Champions. I'm doing the Champions of Champions. Are you going to be there on Wednesday watching?
Is it still going?
Yeah.
hang on, Wednesday? What's Wednesday?
Wednesday we're recording the Champions of Champions. Champions of Champions of Champions.
Can you stop saying Champions of Champions? Did you win your series?
I won my series.
Oh, bless your little heart. Why not?
I've got a trophy at home. And
have you?
Yeah.
I can't really tell you what's going to be the on-stage task, if that's what you're trying to get
I was trying to get that out.
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Because that would be an advantage.
No.
Because I could practice.
It's usually something with sort of balloons or mirrors, isn't it?
It is, yeah. who do you think will win the Champion of Champions?
Who's in it?
Me?
Don't say we're watching it.
Yeah, but we haven't done it yet.
Honestly, the chances of me saying are zero. I didn't know this show is still on telly.
Ed, we haven't done it yet. We've done our task, but we haven't. I've no idea anyone else has done. I've been brilliant. Ed Gamble.
Yep, I was at his wedding. Go on.
I saw you on the Instagram. Yep. Lou Sanders.
Yeah.
Lisa
Tarbuck. Yep, Tarbuck. Yep, Tarby.
Kerry Godliman.
Godliman, yeah.
Richard Herring.
Yeah, you didn't forget you, did you?
Alex.
Very egotistic person, aren't you?
I put myself at the end.
Yeah. Alex.
Alex Horn is being the Taskmaster's assistant. And yeah. I think Greg Davis
Greg
is the
Davis,
Taskmaster.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, slots in on the throne.
Yeah. Who do you think will win out of that lot?
All right. Yeah, Tarbuck. Genuinely, do you think that? Tarbuck.
No chance. I'm just going in very blasé. I'm not bothered.
Oh, you're going in as an entertainer.
I'm gonna try and make it interesting this time rather than just do the task.
What tasks have you done so far?
Can't say. I'm not allowed to say that, am I?
Well, you can say to me.
Okay.
I wrote the fucking things.
I did one involving. There was an arty one with where you have to use parts of the human body. Do you know that one?
Why aren't you winking?
I can't remember. There was
an arty one where you, what art is there where you don't use a part of the human body?
I was trying to give you a cryptic clue if you did know. I can't remember what I did. It was fun. It was 3 weeks after I'd had a testicle removed. I had to do all of this.
Pardon me?
I'd had
honestly, they've changed the old tasks. Has he got another consultant in?
Yeah. You got to give something very important.
Donate something to Greg.
And
then they make a super champion out of all the body parts. That
Oh yeah, cut off.
It was I can't really, we left it. I had to move the date I was recording because I was in surgery, and then
you go on about the old cancer.
And then they said, we have to do it. We have to do it by this date, and I go, well, that's they said I can't lift anything for 4 weeks, and that's
because of the cancer. Yeah.
And they said, well, that's when we have to do it. So Alex let me lift loads of pipes. I remember lifting loads of pipes around and Alex sitting around watching. Big pipes. I think I did okay, though. But now you say it, can't think about what I had to do. I can't remember anything I have to do. I mean,
I've got to say, it wasn't me saying it. You bought this whole thing.
Okay. But, you know, it must be tough not having won your...
No, I didn't win my show. Josh Whittaker won my show.
Oh, did he? And he's the champion of champions. If I'll meet him in the champion of champion of champions.
It would have been useful to have known that was on the old books, the old champion of champions.
Yeah.
I might have tried to win my...
Got to think ahead. Right, look, we...
I've got to say, Tim Key has written at the top of that one, and there's literally two... It's not a big pad, and there's two pages you've got of questions for me.
And look at David Mitchell. I struggled to...
Oh, okay, yeah. You have put more prep in for me.
I've written down Cambridge Footlights without going to university.
Yep, here we go. It was a quick roundup. Why not? You could put this on the show notes that you could just tune in for the last 2 minutes.
We need answers. Crack my rib.
Yes.
Poetry subtle, deliberately bad. I've put in quotation marks. Does that mean it is
nothing deliberate about it?
Sidekick Simon.
Yep.
Working with Coogan.
Yeah.
Got some good stuff on that. That's worked out very well.
Yeah,
really. I felt we dug into the heart of the artist there. We had some joshing around, and then we got onto that, and we really.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of time for that guy, and you know, you gave me some advice backstage where you said if it goes quiet, that's fine. They're listening.
Yeah. No more.
But it's fucking boring.
No more jockeys.
No more jockeys. We didn't cover that, did we?
No.
Ah, yes. Unicorn mug. Yep.
Inside number 9 didn't cover it.
Cowards, no, didn't cover it. There's a lot of stuff we didn't cover.
Time trumpet speaks Russian. Didn't cover it.
Speaks Russian, didn't cover it.
Mentioned it.
Absolute fucking gift.
Zoom gigs.
Pin drop silence when I was doing my Partridge stuff.
Yeah.
I could have sung a Russian song.
Tree with Kitson.
What?
Talk about Tree with Kitson.
I could have opened the lid on Daniel Kitson, but you know, don't worry, don't mind me.
Someone in a paper wrote, you're mischievous, rarely earnest, tough... a touch, absent-minded. You let a journalist into your... Yeah, a journalist came into your house.
Sure.
Do you remember this interview? A female journalist, I've forgotten her name. You needed to go and get some orange juice and you left her in the house for 10 minutes and she looked around your fucking house and wrote about it.
She's not a fish.
Yeah.
It's okay to leave a journalist in a flat.
It isn't.
It's not okay to leave a journalist in a flat.
She looked around all your stuff and said you had a
She's
bar.
A journalist, mate. She's looking for dirt.
I know. Don't do that. She saw that you had a bath full of liquid.
Water.
We don't know.
Let's clear that up. Melted snow.
I want you to know, rebrand Tim Key was in there.
That rebrand in Tim Key. It's prepared material.
Alex Horn said about... You lived with Alex Horn, didn't mention that. He's turned his unprofessionalism into an art form. Nonchalance bordering on arrogance. I agree.
That's fantastic. He said that?
Yeah.
I love that guy.
Watson, Basden, Horn, friendly rivalry. Could have put a question mark on
Yeah,
that.
Yeah. Some of these questions are fantastic.
Poetical playing cards. The slut in the hut. He used to thought as a wife.
That's why I came on here to promote that book, but that'll really come up.
Yeah. The last one's good. So is that that's going to be an audio book?
Yeah, you know, I wrote it, to be fair.
Yeah.
We can't really say we when you're writing a book. But yeah, I wrote that in the first lockdown and it came out at Christmas. And you can buy it, obviously, because it's a book. And now we're discussing an audio book. Okay. I was discussing it today outside a cafe.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And is the we the same we who wrote it?
Yeah.
You can just do an audio book on your own. You don't need anyone else. You just do it.
But you haven't read this book.
Okay. I haven't read it.
I find that weird.
I thought I'd listen to it on the audio.
I'll go and grab it.
Okay. I'll read it now. Got a lot of stuff back there, hasn't he? He's really come prepared for an evening house. He's got... Yeah, that's the book. Oh, yeah, and I've seen a picture of this. Yeah. Should I just read it now? It's really little type.
You know, when you said, oh, man, I thought you were going to say, this is fantastic. I thought you were going to say something like, look at the design.
It's like not good for an old man like me.
Not good for an old man like me. I mean, it's not going to fly off the shelves, is it?
Not a very thick text, is it?
You wanker! I spent 3 months writing that.
It's good.
It's good. He likes it.
Not very good for the audio podcast, this bit.
You don't need to say audio when you're saying podcast. How long have you done this?
Can I keep that?
Yeah, for a bit.
Okay.
I'll grab it in the dressing room.
Right. Anything else coming up?
No.
Okay.
Oh, I'm doing some gigs at the Bill Murray.
Yes.
Yeah. How about David? Has he got stuff coming up?
He's, can't remember. Said something at the end, didn't he? He's doing a play or something, isn't he? Doing...
Outsiders.
Oh, he's doing,
he's got
the Taskmaster rip-off thing he's doing.
What?
No, he's got all the Taskmaster. He's got all the Taskmaster contestants in it, but everything has, doesn't it? You just go on Taskmaster, then you get on loads of other shows, unless you go on Taskmaster and are quite boring and just try and do your best.
Yes. If you do that, then you need to really make sure that you're the task consultant for the next 10 seasons. Yeah.
Good. I'll do that next time. I'd rather win than be on Never Mind the Buzzcocks anyway. So... Actually, I end up writing on Never Mind the Buzzcocks, so it's even worse. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please give a fantastic round of applause to the amazing Tim Key. Thank you very much for this.
Thank you.
Come back and see some more. We're sold out next week. Kathleen Ryan and Chaparak Kazandi the Weekend. You have been listening to Hullustapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Tim Key. Thank you to Scant Regard for playing this music now. It is nice. I would also like to say I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. I'd like to thank Chris Evans, not that one, because he's sitting looking at me as I'm saying this in the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre for their fantastic work on this show. This is a Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com and Sky Potato production. Go to richardherring.com/gigs and you can find out where we're doing Hullustapuzz from now on. This is the Leicester Square Theatre mainly. And also, you can get the live stream if you like that kind of thing. And also, you can sponsor me for my run, justgiving.com/monoball. And all the money will go to the hospitals that cut off my bollock.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.